We all have days when we wake up and we feel a bit disoriented. Maybe most things are the same. Maybe almost everything is the same except for one or two things that maybe you had been leaning on or trusting, or, you know, things that were kind of standards and foundational in your life shift. And then all of a sudden, like, everything is disorienting. And everything is like, wait a second. You're going back through everything in your life with a fine-tooth comb. Now you're questioning everything. Every once in a while, something unexpected happens and disrupts sort of the rhythm of whatever, your life, the way that things are going. It's like the sweet old lady in church clapping offbeat, you know? It disrupts everyone around her, you know? She, the best of intentions, but man, it's just unavoidable. It's like whenever you hand a white person a tambourine and it's like, oh my gosh, the whole thing's messed up now. We're getting ready for baby number three next month, my wife and I, and for, yeah, sure, babies. But out of nowhere, our seven-year-old starts protesting sleep. So we're getting ready for a newborn and being up all night and everything, but not because of the seven-year-old a month before the newborn shows up. It can be a small thing that disorients you, like burning your mouth on coffee at the beginning of the day, and then you're thinking about it all day. It can be an enormous thing. It can be an unexpected diagnosis. It can be a bill that showed up in the mail that was 10 times more than it was supposed to be. We've had all of it around here lately, haven't we? This past week, Charlie Cutler, one of our longtime family members, passed away unexpectedly on a while he was boarding a plane to go to Disney. No warning, no planning for the loss, just gone. And this news about Jake, our teaching pastor for the last 2 years in this position, ending for him. There had been 18 months of conversations behind closed doors that we weren't privy to, appropriately so. But then all of us, you know, find out without warning. Sometimes surprises are fun, sometimes surprises are not fun. I've been talking with friends about it for the last couple weeks, coworkers about it, of course, people from church here. There are times when you can sort of see change coming from a long way off, like you can see it on the horizon, and you're like, all right, we have to prepare for this. We have to batten down the hatches. We have to go get our milk and our bread, and we will weather the storm together. But there are also times when something blindsides you. You're like focusing over here, and this thing comes up from the side from nowhere and just knocks you off your feet. In college, we had this thing, my friends who played hockey would call it a buddy pass. I don't even know if it's a real term, but a buddy pass when you're skating forward and you're looking behind you, someone's passing the puck to you and you're going to catch it and you turn around right into like a brick wall of a check, you know, getting hit. Okay, yeah, so keep your head up when you're skating. It's disorienting to say the least. You're focusing on this thing over here and then all of a sudden you're blindsided. Now imagine taking one of those buddy passes underwater. That's what we watched in the opening video here, is Navy SEAL training. What to do when you're underwater, when you're 100 feet down and it's pitch black and something yanks your respirator out of your mouth. Or you get knocked around and your goggles go flying off. My roommate in college is a Navy SEAL now, and that's where that footage is from training, because panic isn't an option if you're 100 feet underwater and you get your oxygen respirator knocked out of your mouth. Swimming straight up as fast as you can isn't an option. So imagine you're all geared up like these guys. You've got your oxygen supply. You know what to depend on. You have clear vision. You're going along. You're doing your thing. And then out of nowhere, they rip it off. These guys are like tying their oxygen tubes in two, and they're turning their valves off, and they're just messing with them so that these SEALs are prepared. And I believe this is a really helpful metaphor, actually, to understand what to do when we're disoriented. Whenever we're caught off guard by something, and when in doubt, it's just good philosophy to learn from a Navy SEAL. When in doubt. So the three steps when you find yourself disoriented, this is the big idea of today. is this. Number one, find your oxygen. Number two, clear your vision. And number three, get moving. First things first, you need oxygen. It's what, you know, being a fickle human being requires of us. You need to find your tank. You need to reconnect the tubes. You need to get the respirator in your mouth and take a few deep breaths. It's blurry. You can open your eyes. It's blurry. It's dark. You don't really know where you are. But if you have oxygen, immediately everything else becomes less of a panic, doesn't it? It's the same thing they say in planes. When, you know, in case of an emergency, you get your own oxygen mask on and then you can help the people around you. It's counterintuitive if you have kids, but man, you're of no help to your little kids if you pass out from lack of oxygen. So you need to reconnect to your life source, oxygen. Take a few breaths. Okay, the next thing can wait. And once you have oxygen and you're able to just sort of orient yourself for a second, you need to find your mask. You need to see where did that tumble off to, feel around, put the mask on your face, clear the water out. You know, the mask is going to be full of water, but you tip your head back and you blow through your nose and it blows all the water out, fills it back up with oxygen, and you can sort of blink for the first time and see, you know, clearly what's around you. This is when you can sort of begin to orient yourself and see where everything is. Okay, that's where my stuff is over here. Begin putting it on. And then and only then begin moving forward again. One of the most dangerous things is to begin moving forward when you don't have your orientation set up. This reminds me of a story in the Bible, Matthew chapter 28. And if you have a Bible, you can open it. We'll go through the full chapter just verbatim on screens. It says this, starts with this. Early on Sunday morning, just like today, as the new day was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to visit the tomb. Now, the leader of their revolution, the leader of their thing that they were doing together, had just been executed. Talk about disorienting. This is the guy that they had intended to follow for the rest of their lives. This guy, like, they had just met a few years ago. He had radically changed their lives. He had inspired them to bring a revolution of love to their little ancient towns in the Middle East. They were all young, relatively young, and they had their entire lives ahead of them. And then one day, out of nowhere, he's gone. They all had different expectations of what Jesus would do politically or socially or religiously, spiritually. The one thing they didn't expect was that he would be arrested, falsely accused, and executed by the state. And this, rightfully so, left his followers disoriented. They didn't know what to do. They had all responded differently. And that's sort of interesting, and I want to look at that together about the different ways that the people around Jesus responded to this disorientation. Mary and Mary, it says here in verse 1, that they went to the tomb. So they were like publicly grieving. They didn't know what to do, but they were like, we're going to bring flowers to his grave, or we're just going to like go and, I don't know if you've ever lost someone unexpectedly, but like just being around them, even just being near a casket or being at the cemetery just brings this feeling of closeness. You're out in public. This is what Mary and Mary were doing. They were like, I don't know what we're going to do, but let's just go and be there, be near him. Verse 2, suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, rolled aside the stone, and sat on it. His face shone like lightning, and his clothing was as white as snow. The guards shook with fear when they saw him, and they fell into a dead faint. See, they didn't have their oxygen masks. Then the angel spoke to the women. Don't be afraid, he said. I know you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He has risen from the dead, just as he said would happen. Come see where his body was lying. And now go quickly and tell his disciples that he was risen from the dead and that he's going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there. Remember what I have told you. Verse 8, the women ran quickly from the tomb. They were very frightened, but also filled with great joy. It's a good note there that we can experience multiple emotions at once. very frightened, but also filled with great joy, and they rushed to give the disciples the angel's message. And as they went, Jesus met them and greeted them, and they ran to him. They grasped his feet and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go tell my brothers to leave for Galilee, and they will see me there." Do you know where the men are at this point? They're hiding. They're hiding. If you read John chapter 20, these guys, these leaders of this revolution, they're hiding behind closed doors, locked doors. John chapter 20 says that they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. So their big kahuna has just been executed, and they're like, "I'm next." Maybe they have a hit list. Maybe they're coming after us, and they're just going to roll right through us. So they're hiding. In the Mary's moment of disorientation, they grieve publicly. They're like, "We're going to do the hard thing. We're going to go out. We're going to be face to face with this." And all of the men are hiding behind locked doors. I'm just saying, the women were out in public being brave. The men were like, "I don't know what's next. I'm going to hide right here." Listen, sometimes hiding is okay. Sometimes taking a moment, and the healthiest thing you can do is step away from the chaos, to take a few breaths, to lock your doors, and to just reorient yourself. And in fact, one of the least helpful things we can do is publicly process half-processed thoughts and feelings. Makes me think of like a politician when they step out of like a closed door thing and they just want to get to the elevator and they're like beelining it, and the media is like, wait, what's going on in there? What did you say? Da-da-da-da-da. And eventually one reporter always has like some question that gets their attention, and they turn around and they respond, and it's typically not very well thought out. And it's typically just kind of like a half-processed thought, and there's your soundbite, and then that's what's going around the 24-hour news cycle that night. Processing things publicly is obviously possible, but it's dangerous because, man, our emotions, you know, we can say something that we didn't fully mean to say. We can say something that, you know, might be interpreted in the wrong way. And, you know, with the internet and everything today, man, it's locked in the public domain now. If someone else uploads the video, you're in trouble. So what happens next? Matthew 28, let's keep reading. Verse 11, as the women were on their way, some of the guards, Roman guards, went into the city. They woke up from their faint. They went into the city and they told the leading priests what had happened. A meeting with the Jewish elders was called. So they called everyone together and they're like, "We have to get our stuff straight." And they decided to give the soldiers a large bribe. Again, money becomes a big player in this story around Jesus' execution. They told the soldiers, "You must say, 'Jesus' disciples came during the night while we were sleeping and they stole his body.'" Okay? This is like our messaging platform while we're out on, you know, the news networks for the next week, right? "If the governor hears about it, we'll stand up for you so you won't get in trouble. You know, we have your back." So the guards accepted the bribe and said what they were told to say. And their story spread widely among the Jews, and they still tell it today. So here's another way that people respond to disorientation. Conspiracies start spreading. Gossip starts spreading. The Jewish leaders immediately start spinning the story to hide the truth of the resurrection. In times of disorientation, there's a temptation to fill the gaps in the story with suspicion, with gossip, with conspiracy. Assuming the worst, obscuring the beauty and the nuance and the details and the truth, and dumbing the story down to be a soundbite and to lose all of the important details. We do that all the time, don't we? One of Jake's most memorable teachings to our staff and leadership was that whenever there's a gap in knowledge, okay, whenever we don't have the full picture, meaning you weren't in the room or you don't know the motives or you don't know whatever, you weren't privy to this thing, whenever you don't have the full picture, you fill that gap in knowledge. You fill that with trust, not suspicion. You fill these gaps with trust, not suspicion. That's what it means to be a part of a family. If we're going to assume anything, we're going to assume that people involved with this closed-door decision or something are trustworthy inherently, and that they made these decisions out of prayer and faithfulness and what is best for everyone involved. The Bible captures and preserves this ugly aspect of our human nature, because we're all Roman guards every once in a while. We're all Jewish leaders trying to spin the stories to minimize the damage or to make this thing look like we come out on top. And it's amazing that it's still our tendency some 2,000 years later. All it takes is like the tiniest little nugget about some meeting that a president had or some 2020 candidate, and we fill all the gaps with suspicion. That's like what our whole news media experience in 2019 is about. It's like we have these Mad Libs narratives with all these gaps, and we fill every gap with something salacious. Everything, something scandalous. You know, we read a redacted report, and every single thing here must be, oh man, this is so bad. We should assume the worst. I can't tell you how many times I get a breaking news notification on my phone only to click into it and see that it's a micro parcel of a story that is still developing, still doesn't have any of the details. They're just trying to steal my attention for a minute and make a buck on their advertising. It's one of the shadow sides of all this information we're bombarded with, these media outlets. And don't think that you're immune to this. We all have our own little media outlets. We all have our Facebook pages. We all have the people we text that we have authority with. We all have our Instagram stories or our Twitter feeds or those that we will email. We have the pressure of our media outlets to push stories out before they're fully developed, to influence the people that are listening to us and watching us. Hey, I know you heard this part of the story, but here's the truth, and here's my spin of the story, and here's my opinion, and let's all throw it into the chaos and see what happens. When we first started our company, my wife and I, this small branding agency, whenever a client would email or call me and sort of like vaguely say, hey, I'd love to like schedule a phone call with you tomorrow. I have something I want to talk about. It would like ruin my day. I would be like, about what? Give me details. I want to know like what do you want to talk about? Do you want to tell us how great everything is? Do you want to tell us that you don't want to finish the project? Do you want your money back? Do you like me? And I kid you not, the other Sunday, Allie called and vaguely said, hey, I want to come over and we can like talk. And I was like, okay, great. What is this about? And she shows up and she's like, oh no, I don't really have anything to talk about. I just felt awkward inviting myself over. I just wanted to like hang out. And so I wanted to be like kind of vague and like, no, just come over. I don't need this like 10 minutes of anxiety. That like something bad has happened. Good grief. We all have opportunities each and every day to fill the gaps with trust or to fill the gaps with gossip, to honor the people involved or to spin stories about them behind their backs. What would it look like for us to be able to fill the gaps in any narrative with trust? Chapter 28 ends with these verses. Verse 16, then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some of them doubted. Okay, now this is amazing to me because this is the 11. These are the 11 remaining disciples that didn't sell Jesus out. They go, they see him, but some of them doubted. If the Bible was just like some big propaganda thing and it was all lies and they're trying to mess with us and whatever, this is like the worst detail to include. That the 11 went and they were like his closest friends, and even them, they were like, what the heck is this? What's happening? I don't know if I'm like into this. We just saw him die. Like, is this, what kind of witchcraft is going on here? And it's amazing though, the beauty of the Bible, that the Bible has chosen to preserve this doubt as an understandable and as an acceptable response from anyone that witnesses the miraculous. And it's as if God just says, like, you know what, that's okay. I'm okay with your doubt. I'm okay with you being like baffled and being like, I don't know about this. And it ends, verse 18, Jesus came and told his disciples, I've been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I've given you. And be sure of this, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. So after all of the disorientation, the public grieving of the Marys, the private hiding of the disciples, the gossip of the Roman guards, and the doubt, Jesus meets with them face to face. And what does he do? He puts them back on mission. Jesus reorients these people to himself as the authority, as the source of life, as the oxygen, you could say. And then says, now go. This moment in the lives of the disciples shows us what to do when we're disoriented, when something unexpected happens in life, in church, or in scuba diving. Find your oxygen, clear your vision, and get moving. Jesus meets his friends on the heels of the most confusing, depressing, disorienting moment of their lives, and he says, look at me. Look at me. Okay? I have been given all authority on heaven, in heaven and on earth. I'm trustworthy. You're looking for something to lean your weight on? Lean your weight on me. You're looking for a source of life? I am your source of life. Take a deep breath. I know that was scary. I know that what you just went through was disorienting. I know that was confusing. But you're okay. And he continues saying, okay, now I'm going to clarify this vision that I have for your life. I don't want there to be any doubts, any confusion, any blurriness to this dream that I have for you and for what I want you to do in my absence. I want you to make more and more and more disciples, just like you. People that are formed in the way of love in the face of violence and anger and fear. I want you to reproduce the beauty that I've created in you in the lives of the people around you, whoever they are, whatever they've been through. I want you to teach these new disciples to love God and to love their neighbors. There's the commands. Love God and love your neighbor. I want you to teach the people that you're loving to not succumb to legalism and religiosity and all of this keeping up with the country club, but to faithfully pursue the Father in everything that they do. And also, you're not going to be doing this alone. You're going to be surrounded by brothers and sisters, and I will be with you until the end of the age. You have nothing to fear. You've tapped into this endless supply of oxygen in me. You have a crystal clear picture of what I want the rest of your life to look like. Now it's time to get moving. Friends, there is grace upon grace for you for however long you need to process confusing news. I don't know how long you need to be publicly grieving or privately hiding behind locked doors with your buddies. Some are quicker than others. Some are quicker than others to just sort of pivot and reorient and say, all right, this is what we're doing. But I want you to take your time to do what you need to do, to grieve, to hide away for a bit. But please know that while you're doing that, that Jesus doesn't want this disorientation to define you. We have a tendency to be so reactive, whether you're the one receiving news about yourself or we're receiving news about someone else, we are wired to jump to conclusions. That's why I would be a terrible trial judge. I just believe whoever's speaking at that moment. Plaintiff, defendant, I'm like, you make a great point, you go to jail forever. you go to jail. I'm just so reactive. I don't have the patience to do that. Jesus wants us back on mission, loving the world in unconventional ways, giving of our time and talents in surprising ways, dedicating our lives to something larger than ourselves. It's okay to let a buddy pass knock you down, okay? You didn't see it coming. You're not being blamed for that. It's okay to get the wind knocked out of you when you've sort of got blinders on and someone, you know, comes in from the side. But we can't let it take us out of the game. There's way too much at stake. So by way of applying some of this to our lives, and then we'll wrap and we'll take communion together and we'll sing more. Number one, find your oxygen. Number two, clear your vision. Number three, get moving. For you, what is your source of oxygen? Wherever you're at, maybe you're not raised in the church, maybe you're not all in with this Jesus thing. Where do you find life? Where do you find connection to God? When you're disoriented, what can you tap into that you know will breathe life into your lungs? Maybe it's family. Maybe it's like time away with your family, or trusted, you know, loved ones, trusted friends, mentors, people that you know want the best for you, people that aren't trying to get something from you, people that are going to speak truth to you. When Jesus was running low on oxygen in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before he would be executed, he needed his friends around him. He asked that his friends would stay up late into the night and pray with him. Whatever that paints a picture of God for you, God in flesh said, hey, all of you, I need you around me. I need you praying and supporting me because I'm anxious and I'm not looking forward to what's next. Maybe it's time away in nature. Maybe it's time to unplug, to drive somewhere, leave your phone in the car, sit down at the water's edge, breathe, bring a journal. Maybe not more input, but just creating space a little bit to get some out, to process some, to write some stuff down. Jesus did this all the time. When the crowds were too much, when the pace of ministry was too much, he would wake up before the disciples and he would disappear up a mountain to spend alone time with God. When you're running low, what sort of self-care can you administer to get your oxygen levels back up? And here's the thing that is very true. When the lower your oxygen levels get, the worse decisions you make, the more disoriented you are. This is like when you watch documentaries about Everest and like people with low oxygen levels, they're like near the summit and they're like, I'm just going to sit down for a minute. And they're like, no, don't sit down. You're disoriented. You're making terrible decisions. So the earlier you catch yourself with a lack of oxygen, the better. The earlier you're aware of like, okay, wait a second, I'm not myself. I'm kind of like starving a little bit. I'm atrophying a little bit. When we're disoriented, we're in danger of expiring. Not inspiring, expiring. Exhaling and not having any more inhaling coming. That word expire and inspire, to inspire literally means to just breathe life into. To be inspired means to have something breathing life into you. That's this word that we see in Genesis 2 when God is breathing life into Adam. He inspires Adam. In Genesis 2, it says, he breathed the breath of life into the man's nostrils, and the man became a living person. That Hebrew word is neshama. That means breath of life. This is this feminine word that God, masculine God, breathed this feminine breath into man, giving him life, inspiring him, this vital breath, this divine inspiration. What brings you life? What inspires you? What fills you with hope and inspiration for what's next? A lot of times, these moments of disorientation, we try to race past the moment of disorientation, and I think we miss a lot in the meanwhile. I see this like mental image of someone being in rock bottom, you know, being in the bottom of a pit, being, you know, the Bible talks about, lifted me up out of the miry clay, like just being in the mud. and just wanting to be lifted out of the mud, meanwhile missing that there might actually be some gems there for us at the bottom of the pit. There might be some lessons for us while we're sitting there to like pick up out of the dirt and say, you know what? I think I'm going to take this with me. I think that this is helpful. And I see so many friends of mine racing past this moment in their lives. It could be on the heels of a failed startup. It could be on the heels of not getting the promotion you were looking for. It can be on the heels of a miscarriage. It can be on the heels of a failed church plant or a failed relationship. And we just want to race on to the next thing, because disorientation is uncomfortable. No one likes feeling sort of vertigo things, so we want to minimize this to be as short as possible, meanwhile missing all of the life lessons for us here, and likely to repeat a lot of those same mistakes in the future. Inversely, as a side note, I have some friends who sit in the mud for too long, and it sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but there is a too long element of how long someone is sitting and wallowing and stuck behind closed doors. This is where you lose all momentum entirely, and someone's just sitting with a respirator in their mouth on the bottom of the ocean, breathing, victim, woe is me. This is my life now. I'm just going to sit here. I'm not doing anything. All I know is that these near-death experiences, literal or metaphorical, obviously metaphorical here, put things into perspective. When we get back oriented and we look at the thing we were doing when we were blindsided, like some of those hockey players might have woken up in the trainer's room and they're like, I think I'm done playing hockey. I think what I was doing, I shouldn't do anymore. I can see clearly with perspective. Maybe it's time to hang this up. I've got kids. This is my 10th concussion. I think I'm done. And on the other hand, you might look at the thing that you're doing and have unwavering devotion to it and say, this is just the cost of doing what I've been called to do. This is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, and my life depends on it. These crucible moments refine us. They strengthen us. You can study scuba diving all you want in the classroom. You can watch all the YouTube videos you want, but it doesn't compare to getting in the water and experiencing this extreme moment. And the last thing that comes, I think years after sometimes, these crazy experiences, is a sense of gratitude. And it typically happens when you're back on dry land, and you're like back on the beach and you take all your scuba gear off and you just have a minute to just be like, holy moly. And this sense of gratitude overtakes you, because guess what? You survived. The worst possible thing that could have happened happened, and you're still here. You made it. You didn't choose it, of course. You didn't want it, of course. But you traveled full circle from orientation, I'm on my mission, I'm doing my thing, disorientation, knocked off your horse, and then the hard work of reorienting yourself. And not everyone does that. Not everyone makes that full circle, but you have. That's when we can reflect and be grateful for what we've had to endure. This is when Jesus sits us down, Harbor, and looks us in the eye and says, I want you to help more and more people find their way back to me. Everyone, no matter where they're at, doesn't matter how many, doesn't matter what they're up to right now or what they're going through or what they've been through, you, Harbor, know what it's like to live with freedom. Even if it's just for a second, you have felt it. You know what it's like to be forgiven. You know what it's like to have this joy and hope just come out of nowhere and be like, I don't know why I'm hopeful right now, but I am. You know what it's like to find hope when everything feels hopeless. And Jesus looks at us and says, I want you to share that hope with others. I want you to help the people around you find a life that becomes larger than themselves. And this isn't just so that someday in heaven we have like extra gems in our crown or anything stupid like that. This is about changing people's futures today. This is about changing someone's tomorrow today. If you introduce a young mother to this way of life and following Jesus, this will change her entire family. You introduce a student to the love of God at the right time, at the right moment, and it will change the entire trajectory of their life. You introduce some greedy old rich man to the joy of Jesus, it's going to change his legacy. You have a choice. You can stay here in this disorientation. You can quit. Or you can take a few breaths, brush the dust off of you, and start living for others again. Helping people find their way back to God. That's why we're here. It's why we've been here for 20 years. It's why we gather. It's why we give. It's why we do the hard work of reconciliation when there's a rift in our trust in our family. It's why we sit next to each other and sing when we don't feel like singing. It's why we forgive one another when we don't feel like forgiving. It's why we fight for unity and why we walk forward together into tomorrow, believing that God's not done with us yet. There's still work to do. And what a gift that we get to do this together. Let's pray and see if we can find the courage to do that. Father, we don't need to fill this space with more words. So we take a moment to breathe, to wiggle our fingers and our toes and remind ourselves that we're alive, to sit upright and realize that these bodies we have, for the most part, work, and that there's a future for us, that you have a hope for us. Jesus, we thank you for the life that you have brought us and continue to bring us. May it not be wasted on our navel gazing. We love you, Lord. We pray this in Jesus' holy and resurrected name. Amen.